Oh, the challenge to live lightly. There are stretches over the course of my life when I have felt flooded with confusion, sadness, disgust, being overwhelmed. This past February 14th was one of those times. That week, 17 people, 14 students and 3 adults, were murdered at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida. I felt the weight of those killings especially heavily because on February 14, in 2008, 5 Northern Illinois University students were killed and 17 were wounded at a building on campus, which is about a mile from our home. That evening, as helicopters flew overhead, Tony and I invited the DeKalb UUs into our home. We needed one another. That evening, we heard Nicole tell her story. A bright student, a soprano in the choir, a worship lay leader, a lover of little children, and a great slam poet. Nicole had been in the room and crawled on her knees and her belly through the lecture hall and out the door as bullets ripped through the room and students screamed and died. February 14th passed, but just 10 days later, on February 23rd this year, the cover of our local paper, the DeKalb Daily Chronicle, pictured 4 police officers, and I'm sorry it's not a slide, 4 police officers heavily armed, wearing helmets and bulletproof vests. The headline reads, DeKalb standoff. Domestic incident causes lockdown at nearby schools. One of those schools, Clinton Rosette Middle School, is 1 mile from our home. Thankfully, no one died this time, but it's all around us, the violence. You have experienced it here on the property of your own church. Even if you are not the one being shot at, I believe this culture of trauma impacts us all. It affects our capacity to cope and our children's development. Yesterday, at the March for Our Lives in Washington, D.C., one young woman, Edna Chavez from Las Vegas, spoke to the crowd, and that crowd was estimated at 800,000 people in D.C. alone, not counting the other 800 marches around the country. Edna Chavez said, "I learned how to duck bullets before I learned how to read. I not only lost my brother, Ricardo, to his death, but I lost my mother, my sister, and myself to the trauma and the anxiety of violence. Instead of making black and brown students feel safe, they continue to profile and criminalize us. How do you live in the midst of this heaviness that weighs on our nerves and our bodies? How do you respond to the press of human need and the wounds that we ourselves have perpetrated on our home, this earth?" As a minister, I have chided myself, knowing that I am supposed to bring the person who brings words of strength and hope, even as I felt myself becoming more tired or more ineffectual. And I know that I am not the only clergy person or mental health professional who has felt that way. Where to begin, we ask ourselves. How do we live lightly in the midst of all of this? I don't know your personal stressors or how they may layer one atop the other in your lives. I don't know how you respond to anger or frustration or sadness and the real and the perceived helplessness that rise in your thoughts. I've met people, and I know family members whose response is that they will not watch the news or read newspapers any longer, and that includes all the other media. They are practicing withdrawal. And I do believe that we may need to withdraw from pain for a time. Trauma does not have a simple, linear cause and effect. Trauma is like a pebble that hits your windshield. First, there is the ding, the divot that cuts. But you may shrug that off. And yet what follows is the spider web effect that spreads over days and days of driving. The bumps and the pressures expand the stress, and the cracked glass slowly becomes more brittle. Mental health professionals are aware that the size and severity of response to trauma varies as widely as there are different types of people. So while it may be necessary to withdraw from pain some of the time, we who regard ourselves as people of a living, covenantal faith, we need to find our way to live lightly and re-engage with our wounded society and our hurting earth. Wendell Berry wrote, "It is not only our own capacity for life that is stifled by our arrogant assumptions. The creation itself is stifled. We have been wrong. We must change our lives so that it will be possible to live by the contrary assumption that what is good for the world will be good for us." What I hear in these words is a challenge for us to choose life and to choose community over individual desire. We UUs have been strong in our conviction that individual rights matter. And they do. They do. I know that at a deeply personal level. Without Unitarian Universalists lifting up the rights of lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer folk, Tony and I would not have had a safe place. We would not have had a church home and a people who engaged and re-engaged with this culture to say, love matters, and your right to love matters. It was expansive. Perhaps What we are facing now, however, as UUs and as a nation, perhaps this aspect is not about the expansion of rights. It is rather the tension of individual rights posed against communal safety and our survival on this earth. My right to own a gun, or my right to own any gun I want, versus your right to feel safe, to be safe, to send your children to school and know they are safe. Or my right to maintain oil and coal as a primary element for energy versus your right to put up wind or solar farms. Americans in general do not like to be told that some individual rights must be curtailed. There is history and pride in the achievement of our rights. But in both Wendell Berry's words and in the speeches of the young people at the March for Our Lives yesterday, we are being told that to survive means we must change our lives. That to live with humility means that we must learn what is good for the world and yield to its limits. I argue that individuality that sacrifices community is a heinous form of greed. So I ask you, what is good for the world? Among the youth who spoke at the March for Our Lives, I listened to Alex Wind, a junior from Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High. Alex said, 96 people die every day from gun violence. There has been no gun legislation since 2008. Are they going to arm our pastors and our rabbis to protect our churches? Are they going to arm Mickey Mouse at Disney World? There are weapons of war in the hands of civilians in this country. All this comes down to is life or death. So I ask you, what is good for this world? I listened to 11-year-old Naomi Wadler from Alexandria, Virginia, who led the walkout at her middle school after Parkland. She was accused of not being smart enough to have ideas of her own because she was too young, and that she was simply a tool of the adults who were running their own agenda. With strength and defiance, young Naomi responded, "I am here to represent the African American girls whose deaths don't make the evening news or the national papers. I am here to say that everyone should value these girls too." So I ask you, what is good for the world? I researched a bit and I read gun violence statistics from the CDC's National Center for Injury Prevention and web-based injury statistics reporting system. In 1 year, on average, across all ages, 116,255 people in the United States are shot in murders, assaults, suicides, unintentional shootings, or by the police. And of those, 35,141 people die each year from gun violence. So I ask you, what is good for the world? What is good for the world? Unitarian Universalists, we are. I believe that we as a covenanted community of faith are good for the world. We as persons who learn skills and strategies to survive and cope with trauma and anxiety, we are good for the world. We as people who maintain a sense of wonder and humility and awe because we are small before the vastness of the universe, we are good for the world. We who pledge to learn what is good for this earth and who respond with courage, we are good for the world. The truth is that the demands before us are huge. And our children are once again leading a march, leading a movement once again. So I ask you, at whatever age you are, for each of us must live lightly. How do you live lightly amidst all of this? Each one of us must search and know where to find grace. Grace to me is the love that renews me when I am depleted. I find that grace in many places. Perhaps you find it when you open your heart and talk with your spouse, or with a friend, or share deeply with a UU acquaintance over a cup of coffee. Perhaps your heart opens in a moment during worship or before the arts. Did you know there were online apps for mental health? And there are many of them. One called Mind Shift or Panic Relief or PTSD Coach, to name only three. Perhaps you might find some grace there. Perhaps you are renewed through poetry or literature or with a sports buddy over a beer, or talking with a professional counselor. Perhaps taking in a deep breath while gazing at something beautiful. Your child. Nature. Your work with a colleague. Or music. The music of Unitarian Universalist composer Carolyn McDade has brought me grace and continues to strengthen me and give me hope in stressful times. She wrote Spirit of Life, and she wrote Rising Green, which we sang. Go back and read the words. It is gorgeous about the rising of the green in the spring and hope rising in us. Perhaps if I visit again, we'll try it again. Carolyn McDade wrote a song titled The Call of Things. Living lightly in the call of things. It was that text that inspired this sermon from its beginning. And now I am going to simply sing that song twice through and bring this sermon to its close. She writes, "Make not rigid," that meant limber, "nor give number to the incalculable. Translate not out of meaning another's reach for freedom, nor feed on another's hunger. Know this time and this place. Re-engage as you can. Know this place as home, this church, this earth. Hear one's name spoken lightly in the call of things." Make not rigid, that meant limber, nor give number to the incalculable. Translate not out of meaning another's reach for freedom, nor feed on another's hunger. Know this time and this place. Know this place as home. Hear one's name spoken lightly in the call. Make not rigid, that meant limber, nor give number to the incalculable. Translate not out of meaning another's reach for freedom, nor feed on another's hunger. Know this time and this place. Know this place as your home. Hear your name spoken lightly in the call. Our closing hymn is by Carolyn McDade and Barbara Zanotti. It reminds us that together as a community, we can build justice and peace. Let us rise in body or spirit and sing hymn 121, verses 1, 2, and 3.